Waylon Jennings wrote that song and recorded it in 1976, and then his buddy Willie Nelson recorded it 4 years later and made it into a huge hit. That song still gives me little goosebumps. My heroes have always been cowboys. We've been hearing about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and all the various myths and stories that are told about those guys, their various identities, different versions of what became of them. Did they die in South America? Did they come back? And if so, where they lived, where they died. Jerry Nichol, for him, it's a very personal story. He began hearing tales about an ancestor outlaw when he was just a boy. And as he got older, he decided to go after it, pursue this in a very vigorous way. And he did. He spent 8 years tracking down leads. Resulted and culminated in a book called Bringing Sundance Home, Butch Cassidy's partner, my great-grandfather. He has a lot of proof that he's dug up to suggest that he is, in fact, the great-grandson of the Sundance Kid. And in a moment, we'll come back and we'll hear what he's got. Stick around. Movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, there's a scene where they go to Bolivia and they have an argument about why they're down there and whether it was a good idea or not. And Sundance Kid reveals that his name is elsewhere in the movie, that his real name is Harry Longabaugh, and that he was born in, I think he says in the movie, Atlantic City. In reality, the real Harry Longabaugh was born, I think, in Pennsylvania, so close to Atlantic City. But there are various stories about it. These guys have different identities. They muddied the waters on purpose. So trying to track down the facts is pretty tough. Jerry Nichol has done a heck of a job of it, though. His book is called Bringing Sundance Home, Butch Cassidy's Partner, My Great-Grandfather, the product of 8 years of painstaking work. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on here with you.
Well, you know, I was prepared to think, well, gosh, he can't be right. This is wishful thinking on his part to say that his great-grandfather was Sundance Kid. But you did a heck of a job in this book. There's a lot of evidence in here. Must have been fun.
I have some critics, so I knew I had to, when I started, you know, to make an argument that he was a Sundance Kid, I had to get all the documentation I could and make and present it, you know, I hope beyond a reasonable doubt. So I did a lot of research, took a lot of time, and I did have some other people to help me, and that was the result of that book.
Share with me the story. How young were you when you first started hearing little inklings that there was an outlaw in the family tree?
Well, I just heard that they would talk about him around the family gatherings, and my uncles and my mother, it was my mother's side of the family, and they would just talk about him a lot. They said what a good shot he was, and they knew he rode with Butch Cassidy, and they'd tell us stories about some of the things he did. And of course, he was married to my great grandmother. When he went to South America, he was married to her, and when he come back, he come back to her. But they didn't know that he was a Sundance Kid. But they did know that he rode with Butch Cassidy. They knew that he was one of the gang, and he rode with them, and so.
So you grow up hearing the story. All right, we've got one of our ancestors, our great grandfather, was an outlaw who rode with Butch Cassidy. But nobody says he's the Sundance Kid. You take that on yourself. Starting when?
Well, when I heard all these stories all my life, and I was familiar with some of the Butch Cassidy books. My uncles and grandfather knew Charles Kelly, who wrote the first book, The Outlaw Trail.
Right.
And so I read all these books, and I saw look at that picture, the Fort Worth Five, and I said, wow, that's Bill Long, my great-grandfather. So when I saw that, I saw it earlier, but when I finally said, you know, maybe there's a connection there. Maybe that is my grandfather right there, and he was using the name Harry Longabaugh. I thought then that he was, then I thought he was Harry Longabaugh, and when he married into my family, he used the alias Bill Long, but it was just the other way around.
All right, well, let's walk us through that. Where did you start looking for information, and how did you track it down? What's the evidence?
Well, I put up a website, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't have a lot of information. I put up a website, and with my argument saying, I think this is the Sundance Kid, and I got a lot of people that contacted me, a lot of other researchers, a lot of descendants of other outlaws that knew him, and they and then I had people contacted me and told me where to get information. They directed me to different newspaper articles, old newspaper articles, that and to the Pinkerton files. I got the Pinkerton files from the Library of Congress, and I started putting a timeline together, and what I knew, from all documents I could find from my family, from the Pinkerton records to the newspaper articles, and then I got involved with the University of Utah. Dr. McCullough got involved, and
well, yeah, we'll get into that. Yeah. Let's start with your great grandfather, William Henry Long. Who is he? Where was he born? Where is he from? And how did he become an outlaw? What have you learned?
Well, I learned that he was born in Illinois, and his family, when he was a young man, moved to Washington State, Sultan County, which is right down on the corner. And he stayed home. He didn't get along too well with his dad, I don't think, because he left home, and he wanted to be a cowboy. He was a cowboy, and he was not educated. And that was in those days, you know, you could ride a horse and you could handle cattle. You could get a job as a cowboy. So he left Washington State when I think he was about 19, 20, and he went to Montana over to around Miles City, because that was the primary area of the cattle industry. It was Miles City, around Miles City, you know, or a big radius. You had the railroad that went through Miles City, and they just loaded up the cattle right on the railroad cars and shipped them east to the market. So he got these cowboys could always get a job around Miles City, and he went to work for NBARN, the big cattle company, NBARN Cattle Company, and the Harry Longbauer, and that's where he met Harry Longbauer, was at that same cattle country company.
So William Henry Long meets Harry Longbauer, they cross paths, and it's the beginning of a lifetime of confusion over who's who.
Right. Yeah, so then what happened was the winter came, and Harry Longbauer went down to Sundance, Wyoming, and he stole the horse. And then he went back to Miles City, Montana, and the sheriff of Miles City, Montana picked him up for this horse theft. And then there was the sheriff from Sundance, Wyoming, went up to pick the Giddy, and he took him by railroad train to Minneapolis. And I don't know why he went to Minneapolis instead of going straight back across to Sundance, but he went to Minneapolis and he escaped from the train. And he went north along the Canadian border, and he went to around Calgary someplace. I can't remember the name of this little town. And that's where he remained. But there was the $250 reward that was posted. So they arrested another cowboy to collect that reward. And then this cowboy they arrested was Bill Long. And so they arrested him and said that he was the escaped Harry Longbauer. They were the two sheriffs, and they were in cahoots. They wanted to get this $250 reward, and they applied for it three times with the county commission, and they were denied. And finally, they just said, no, we're not going to give you the money. And I think
so let's back up for a second. So Harry Longbauer is the guy who steals the horse.
Right.
William Long is the guy who gets arrested for it after Harry Longbauer escapes, or William Long is the guy who escaped.
Yeah, Harry Longbauer is the guy that escaped.
But William Long, your great-grandfather, gets arrested.
Right, but they wanted a cowboy that they could turn in and collect that reward. So they arrested my great-grandpa, and took him back to Sundance, and they had a trial, and he was found guilty, and he went to prison for 18 months. That's what, and the name they used for him was Harry Longabaugh. They used, because the newspapers reported that Harry Longabaugh was the one that escaped from that train. But the description of something, we know that Harry Longabaugh was a German, a light-complected German. But the man they put in that jail was a French Creole, and that was Bill Long. He had French and Cherokee blood, and he looked French, like a French Creole.
Well, is there any indication that you've got where he's, where your great-grandfather, William Long, is saying, hey, I'm not Harry Longabaugh, I'm Bill Long?
Right. But they wouldn't listen to him. Except I think eventually when the new prosecutor had another election, and that new prosecutor let him out. He completely exonerated him. And when the two sheriffs tried to collect that reward, they wouldn't give it to him, because I think they knew that they had arrested the long guy and they had tried to fraudulently collect this reward money, and they were denied.
So what's your take on it? Because your great-grandfather was wrongly imprisoned and convicted of crime, did time for it, that it led him down the path to a life of crime?
Well, I think he was a little bit of a shady guy anyway, because he had a brother. He had a brother running a family. He had a brother who was arrested for horse stealing over in Washington State, and he served time in Walla Walla. So it kind of went in the family. So I think it was, I think it was his nature, really. He, even though he was convicted, railroaded for this crime he didn't commit, he was still kind of a shady guy. And at least his family was, and I expect that he was too. So.
So you had heard the stories about his prowess with guns and firearms, things of that sort. What a great shot he was! That would certainly fit the picture of the guy we know who became the Sundance Kid.
Right. Yeah.
So tell me what you learned about your great grandfather and his ability with guns and his career as an outlaw.
Well, he could with a pistol. When the magpie starts, the guy would get into the chicken coop, and they'd fly away. He could shoot them out of the air. He was really good at it, and he could shoot rabbits or on the run, and he could flip. So people could flip coins in the air, and he could shoot them out of the air with a rifle. I don't think he could do it with a pistol, but it must have been a rifle. But he said he'd practiced. He could fill a room with the bullets that. He had practiced so much with shooting, and he was just a guy that loved guns and he liked to shoot all the time. And he was of course, where he lived in Utah, Wayne County, was a lot of gun hunting. Everybody hunted there; they still do, and fished. He was liked to fish, and so he just was a gun guy, and he liked it. He was just that was part of his. Personality, I guess, was just being a gun person.
So. You, in the book, you paint this picture. You agree, as the Boren said, that he did not die in South America. And I guess part of that evidence is what you learned from the Pinkertons. What did you
right.
find in their files?
Well, there's a letter, and there's actually three letters in there. But they have we know the date that the people died in Bolivia. Those, they showed in the movies where those two bandits were killed. We know that date, and I can look it up here. But anyway, there's a letter in the Pinkerton files that shows that Butch Cassidy was in
Wyoming,
Utah, before that shootout. Then that shootout happened, I think it was November of 1908, and he was still in Utah. The shootout happened.
Yeah, that's okay. But okay. It's 1908. We're good with that.
Right. Okay. But anyway, the Pinkerton files show that he was in the United States on Bush. Now, they never did figure out who Sundance was. They never got it. And I think the reason why is because their records have him as Harry Longabaugh, and they just couldn't, because of that, and Harry Longabaugh was long gone to Canada, they just couldn't get a track of him. But they could Bush. They knew Bush. Everybody recognized, they knew Butch where he was at, and they knew he was in Utah. before that shootout, and he was there after that shootout. So.
So the shootout in Bolivia happens, but you think your great-grandfather was back and forth. He didn't just make one trip down there and then come back. He was back and forth because he had a whole different life, separate from the Wild Bunch. Tell me about that.
Yep. Bushy, I think, stayed down there. When he went down there in 1901 or 1902, he stayed there until about 1907. But Bill Long, my grandpa, he didn't. He had a wife and family back in Utah. And he came back, I know, at least three times, and it even reflects that in the Pinkerton files. They give the dates when he came back, the two or three times that he came back. And when he did come back, he bought some ground around Wayne County, Utah, and then he did twice. He bought ground, and they have another time when he came back, and I can't find what he did when he was back the third time. But he had a reason to come back. He had a wife and family. And he came back until, you know, he come back permanent around 1909, and that's when then he stayed home.
And so what did he do? How did he live out the last years of his life from 1909 on?
Well, he got along well with his neighbors. He lived in Wayne County, Utah, till about 1917. And then he had two daughters. They had two daughters of their own. Of course, she was married before, his wife was married before, and had six children with the first husband. I'm actually a descendant of the first husband. And so when that one daughter moved over to Duchesne, well, they moved over to Duchesne to be by that daughter, Duchesne, Utah, near Bernal. And he would just lived a quiet, peaceful life. You know, there's nothing. You know, he did talk about his outlaw days. We all knew he was an outlaw. The family would even talk about some of the stories he'd talk about. He said the Depression came, and he said that he lost his money. He had some money in the bank in Duchesne, and he said that and he lost it. And he said that he robbed the bank, then the bank robbed him back.
Yeah, that was a good line.
Yeah, but he was just a, you know, just a quiet guy, and he tried to, you know, of course he did have a girlfriend or two even after he come back, but he was just that kind of a person. And but he didn't, you know, it was too old, and he was 44 years old when he came back, and he was too old to doing any more robbing or anything like that. I think
you tell a story in the book about him at an advanced age going somewhere to look for treasure that he left behind.
Right. One of those return trips from South America, he took some of that money. They robbed a bank in South America, Bank of the Nation or something, and he took it to Fish Lake, Utah, and he buried it there. And when he moved to Duchesne, he was gone for a week or two, and he come back with cash. And this was in 1917. He come back, and I think it was around $2,000, and bought a ranch with cash. And everybody said, "Where'd you get this money? You know, you're gone, and you come back with this cash." And you know, that was. I think that he had a stash that was part of that loot from that bank in South America that he'd buried up in Fish Lake. So, and then that's what family said. They think that that was loot that he used to buy that ranch in Duchesne.
All right. Included in the work you did, I mean, there's some amazing photo analysis that compares the person that we think of as Sundance Kid in that photo with Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch compared to your great-grandfather. And we'll talk about that on the other side of this break and then get into a little bit of the DNA detective work that was done, what the evidence shows. We're talking with Jerry Nickel about his book, Bringing Sundance Home, a story about his great-grandfather, the Sundance Kid. We'll be right back. And Kid Rock has a cowboy song, a little different from the other ones we've been playing. Takes us into the break.
You know, it could be worse. Get a lot more for your money in Bolivia. I checked on it.
What could they have here that you could possibly want to buy?
Geez, all Bolivia can't look like this.
How do you know? This might be the garden spot of the whole country. People may travel hundreds of miles just to get to this spot where we're standing now. This might be the Atlantic City, New Jersey of old Bolivia, for all you know.
Look, I know a lot more about Bolivia than you know about Atlantic City, New Jersey. I can tell you that.
Ha-ha! You do, huh?
You remember this scene from the movie? Where Sundance says he was born at Atlantic City.
Brought up there.
Jerry Nichols says the story that we've all been taught about Sundance Kid being Harry Longabaugh is wrong. That, in fact, his great-grandfather, Bill Long, is the Sundance Kid. That history got it wrong, and he's out to prove that his version is the right one. When we come back, we'll hear the evidence that he's accumulated right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry Nichols, there's a very famous photo of the Wild Bunch, five members of the Wild Bunch, taken in, I guess it's Fort Worth, Butch and Sundance among them, Kid Curry, Ben Kilpatrick. So, you know, a lot of the audience would be familiar with the appearance of the person we know as the Sundance Kid. I saw the photos that you post in the book of your great-grandfather, and although there's a time differential, I mean, there is a resemblance, that's for sure. What did you do to sort of analyze whether the photos match up?
Well, I had a lot of the circumstantial evidence done. And then one of the people I was working with said, you know, we should do the DNA and get the University of Utah, Dr. McCall involved, because you got a heck of a story here. So we got the Sorensen Genomics out of Salt Lake City said they had a man there do the DNA, and he got us in contact with Dr. McCullough from the University of Utah, and they exhumed the bones and did the DNA sample, and then he was also a facial recognition expert. He'd been to trial, and he convicted a few people just because of comparing the different facial. Between two photographs. And so he did the photographs, and he says, this is the same photograph that's in that Fort Worth 5 photo. Your photo of your grandpa and the photo of the person identified in that photo are the same man. There's no question about that. And he said it was 99% sure. But at the time, I thought that my grandpa name alias was Bill Long, but in fact, he just used the alias Harry Longabaugh when he wrote with Butch Cassidy. And that's what kind of threw me off.
So that confused it even further. Your great-grandfather, named Bill Long, actually used the alias of Harry Longabaugh.
Right. So when he served that time in Sundance, he served the time under as Harry Longabaugh. He had to, because the newspapers had already said it was Harry Longabaugh that escaped from that train. So those corrupt sheriffs said his name was Harry Longabaugh, and of course he denied it. And it was, in those days, there's nothing he could do. And then after he escaped, or after he got out, when he joined up with Butch Cassidy, they all knew who he really was. These outlaws knew who he really was. They knew that he just used the name Harry Longabaugh. I think, maybe to get in with Harry Longabaugh, because when he rode with Butch Cassidy, he used the alias Harry Longabaugh. And when he was home, he was his real name, Bill Long.
And you say
in the Pinkerton files,
right?
Because of those records in the Sundance, Wyoming, is the name Harry Longabaugh. So the Pinkertons said that the Sundance Kid was Harry Longabaugh, and it all has come down from through history as Harry Longabaugh. And in fact, it wasn't Harry Longabaugh. It was just an alias, and he used that as an alias. He used that name as an alias. Harry Longabaugh.
What about the DNA evidence? I remember, and you reprint some of the articles in your book, I think it was 2009, where this was a big story, the fact that DNA testing was being done. What were the results?
Well, yeah, the Deseret News Salt Lake had three articles, and it was really a lot of interest around Utah. Well, we did the DNA, I was able to obtain a DNA sample the same type of DNA that Harry Longabaugh had. It was a relative of Longabaugh. And he volunteered, and we got a sample of DNA. So when we took Bill Long's DNA and compared it with Harry Longabaugh, it didn't match. And, man, we couldn't figure why. What? The DNA doesn't match. We know we had him. We know we had the Sundance Kid. We know we had the same guy in that photograph, but the DNA didn't match. But I didn't know then. I was getting a little ahead of myself. I didn't realize then what happened up in that switch up in Sundance about the escape and how we used the different names. I didn't realize that. Well, with more research, and there was a team of us, actually, three or four of us. One guy was a little ahead of the rest of us, and he said, well, this is what happened. You just go right there and look at did he jump from that train that Harry Longabout did, and then your guy, Bill Long, just was arrested as Harry Longabout, and he used that name when he was a criminal. In his criminal life, he just used that alias, Harry Longabout.
Well, why wouldn't it also make sense that Harry Longabout was the guy in prison, and that the reason the DNA you tested didn't match up with William Long is because it was from the Longabout family and not the Long family? There was two separate families. I mean, that could also explain it, right?
Yeah, well, they are. They're two separate families. The Long family and the Longabout family are not the same. They're not even close. You know,
right.
One's a German, one's a French Creole. And we did get a sample. We did, and the DNA did match the Longabout family. And we could see, hey, what's this? The Long family. We could see that it did match, but it just took more research. We had to go back to those records in Sundance, Wyoming, and determine to see what would happen when they mixed everything up there, and the Pickerners never got it, and it just come down through history as Harry Longabout.
So as far as you can tell, though, you got this timeline where your great grandfather, Bill Long, is the Sundance Kid, and what you know about Bill Long's life matches up the times that he is gone from your family's life matches up with when it is known that Sundance was, for example, pulling a robbery or was out of the country.
Right, exactly. And when the census records, the 1900 census records, he wasn't home. Well, where he was at in 1900, he was on a census record, but he was over around Vernal. And that's where Butch Cassidy was. I think that's where Butch Cassidy, he met up with Butch Cassidy. And then they robbed the Winnemucca Bank, I think, and went to Browns Park. And then Bassett joined them, and she was the first head of play. And that's a different story. But anyway, everything matched. And that's why we were so confident that he was the Sundance Kid, because the timeline was 100% match. We couldn't find any discrepancies at all.
Well, if you are right about Bill Long, obviously, if he was the Sundance Kid and he was in South America, he obviously did not die there because he was back and he died in Utah, right?
Right.
All right. So tell me the circumstances of his death.
Well, it was in 1936, and they were poor. They had lost. It was Great Depression. He had lost everything when the bank failed. And he lived with his oldest daughter, Viola, during the winters because they couldn't take care of themselves. He had really had arthritis. He called it lumbago or something. And when we did that, when Dr. McCullough did the DNA analysis, a forensic examination, you could see that where his hips, he had suffered a great deal of pain. He couldn't hardly walk. Well, when the that winter of 1936. Viola, his oldest daughter's husband, lost his job, she said, you know, you just can't live with us. We can't even buy coal for the furnace, and they lived in Salt Lake City. So he said, well, just take care of Luzerna, that was his wife, and I'll stay here and take care of myself. And she said, no, we can't even do that. Well, he walked in the bedroom, got a .22 pistol. Walked out on the front porch and put the gun to his head and killed himself right there while they were all there. That's one version. There's actually two versions of his death. That's on Viola's version. So she blamed herself the rest of her life. That poor lady suffered, and she always said that, you know, she thought it was her fault that he committed suicide. And that was in November 1936.
But the other version of the story is a little bit more exotic.
Right. And that's the other daughter. They had two daughters. And the second daughter was Evinda. And Evinda said that her son found him out in the corral I had a gun right beside him, a rifle beside him, and the rifle, and somebody shot him in the head and threw the rifle there. And she said, well, I was Matt Warner. Now, Matt Warner was another one of the Wild Bunch, and he lived over not far away. He knew him. And he said, well, Matt Warner killed him. And the reason that Matt Warner that killed him is because Matt Warner was going to come out with a book right about that time, and a tell-all book about him and Butch and all these, the Wild Bunch and their escapades. Well, I think he went over to see Bill Long and told him that he was going to identify him. And Bill, and he didn't want that. Bill Long would not want that at all. So they got into some type of an argument, and he killed him right there at the corral. And that was the Bendis version. Now, I don't know. It is kind of an exotic version, but it's possible because he did know Matt Warner, and he didn't like Matt Warner.
What is the take? So at a minimum, he was a Wild Bunch guy. There's no question he knew all these guys and knew things that they had done and jobs they had pulled. That's at a minimum.
Right.
Is there any indication that Butch Cassidy ever hooked back up with him?
Well, they visited. Yes, they did. They visited in 1925.
You can just be approximate.
Butch Cassidy went to visit his parents in Circleville, Utah.
Right.
And then he went to see my grandparents, who had actually lived in what was left of the old homestead over in Wayne County. And he visited with my grandparents. And then he went over to Price, Utah. Now, Price is where Matt Warner lived, and he had a saloon in Price. So he went over to that saloon because Matt Warner and Butch Cassidy robbed the Telluride Bank years before. So they were friends. So they went to the saloon in Price, Matt Warner's saloon, and then he sent a message to Bill Long that somebody wanted to see him. So he went to the Matt Warner saloon, and there was Butch Cassidy, and they visited, and who knows what they said. But then,
how do you know that part of the story?
Well, it's in Matt Warner's book. Oh. He talks about it. There's a place in Matt Warner's book that says that there was a stranger that came to visit him in that saloon, and they say, well, that was Butch Cassidy. Well, I think that Bill Long also was there because. Came to meet him there because he lived in Price. He didn't live far away. He was in Price when that happened. And so I think, and that's my conclusion, and I heard the family stories that he went to see some old outlaw friend in this saloon down in Price. Well, when he came home from that visit, they asked him, and they knew it was an outlaw friend, and they family asked him, where did you go? Who did you visit? And he said, it's none of your business, and don't act about it again. He didn't want to talk about his outlaw past. So I draw that conclusion that was the same time, because he was there at the exact same time in Price that Butch Cassidy went by the Matt Warner saloon.
So tell me this.
Before he went to visit the outlaw, that was it.
If Bill Long was the Sundance Kid, and there was confusion on purpose, and some of it on purpose, some accidental, with the real Harry Longabaugh. What happened to Harry Longabaugh? Because I would think if the Pinkerton files are all wrong and they're looking for him, why didn't they find him? What happened to him?
Well, he went to Canada, and they found that he was in Canada in 1901. He was in the Canadian census in 1900. And that was the last time that there's any record of him. It was right there in Canada, and I don't know what happened to him. I think he probably died up there in Canada, but I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You know, of course they use that, say, well, he died in South America. Well, he didn't die in South America because the Pinkerton file showed that Butch came back. You know, and he was back in Utah after that shootout. But I don't know what happened to Harry Long. I really think he was kind of a insignificant person, and I don't think he was an outlaw or a criminal, except when he robbed stole that horse and then got away. And I think he just stayed up in Canada, up around Calgary someplace, and he just probably died there as an old man. I don't even know if he had
You have some ideas about Etta Place, who is really a mystery figure in this whole story. Right. You actually think there might be two of them, but tell me who you think the first Etta was.
Well, there was Ann Bassett. She was from Browns Park, Wyoming. She was kind of a notorious person. They've even had books have been written about the Bassett family, and she got in an argument with Tom Horn. You know, of course, Tom Horn was a famous killer. He was hired by the Cattle Association to clean out the rustlers out of Browns Park.
And he'd shoot them. Yeah, he'd just shoot them.
He'd just shoot them. And they, of course, I don't know if you remember the movie. They even made a movie with Steve McQueen. And it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would just shoot them. So he went and got in good with those outlaws of Browns Park. And he figured out who was doing the rustling. And he shot him. He shot Ann Bassett's boyfriend, and he shot another guy. And then, but he'd give him notice. He'd tell him, "Go away, get out of here, or you're dead." Well, he sent one to Ann Bassett to leave. So, and if he didn't, he said she's going to die. So she had to leave Browns Park. Well, right after they robbed the Winnemucca Bank, they went to Butch and Sundance, went to Browns Park, and they were there when that second guy was shot. Not when that. The first one, his first boyfriend, but when the second one was killed by Tom Horn, they were in Browns Park, and they knew Ann Bassett, and so I think what happened was she asked them if they could go, because they told them they were going to South America. They had to start a new life, and they said, "Yeah, sure, you can come with us," and so she wasn't going to Fort Worth, meet him at Fort Worth, but she got sick and got delayed. She eventually made it to New York, and then from New York, they went to South America. But she didn't stay there. One of the return trips that Bill Long brought her back. She didn't want to go out on that frontier way out there. She wanted to go back to Wyoming. And the range war in Wyoming had changed, and Bill Long, or Tom Horn, would soon be hung for the killing of a kid named Willie Nickel, and so she was safe. She went back to Wyoming, and she lived there from then on. And so that's what I know. But I think that she's the one that's in that photograph, that famous photograph of Sundance and the woman. That's Ann Bassett. There was a person that did a photo analysis, like Dr. McCullough did for me, and he concluded, yeah, that's the same person.
Well, it sure looks like a pretty strong resemblance. So tell me this, how does this story go over in the rest of your family, the daughters, you know, that you told they had different versions of how Bill Long died? Did they and other members of your family, are they convinced that he was Sundance?
Yeah, we all knew that he was an outlaw, wrote with Butch Cassidy, and I think matter of fact, I got a lot of the information from my relatives. I have a lot of them. They're a big family, and they're all pretty well convinced that they think I've got it figured out. So
well, Jerry Nickel, I'll tell you, you've done a lot of good work in this. It's a really interesting book, Bringing Sundance Home. I'm glad to have my own copy of it, and I appreciate you being here. And good luck. I wish you good luck, and maybe we've got some. Maybe you got some listeners who are going to send you some leads. We'll have contact information on the website so that anybody listening who might have some insight into this can send it along. Thanks for being here.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
All righty. And Marshall Tucker is going to take us into the break with a song that sounds like a lonesome cowpoke moseying along to visit the school marm. It's called Desert Skies. In a moment, we'll talk with Chet and Kim Brackett about one of the most famous bank robberies of the Old West, the Winnemucca robbery that we've been hearing about tonight. They have a whole different theory about who is responsible. We'll be right back.